Okay, so the passage that we're learning from today is Matthew 9, 16, and 17. So I'm going to read it again. Go ahead and just listen to me or read along. No one puts a piece of unshrunk cloth on an old garment, for the patch tears away from the garment, and a worse tear is made. Neither is new wine put into old wineskins. If it is, the skin bursts, and the wine is spilled, and the skins are destroyed. But new wine is put into fresh wineskins, and so both are preserved. How many of you guys can sew? Show of hands. How many of you can sew? Okay, how many of you guys have wineskins? Me neither. I mean, I figure it's worth a shot. So, it's like, on the first, like, you're jumping into this passage, you hear me read this, from the first get-go, like, it seems like an irrelevant, old, like, out-of-date, like, what does this matter to me kind of passage. And I'll be honest with you, when I first read it, I kind of thought the same thing. It's like, cool, wineskins, okay, could you be talking about, like, Coca-Cola cans? Like, that might make sense to me. Patch of garment, like, I buy my clothes at Target. Like, I don't really know how to sew. I, like, do patches and stuff, so I don't really understand. So it wouldn't be all that. I'm sure I'm the only one that, like, when I read that, I'm like, what does this have to do with me? Like, I'm sure I'm the only one here that was like, well, that's just irrelevant. That just doesn't matter to me. But here's the thing that's important here. Who said that again? Like, whose words are this?
Jesus.
It was Jesus's. And who is Jesus? Well, we talked about this a little bit. He's kind of an important guy. And when he spoke, people listened. When he spoke, people wrote it down. It was something that people remembered. And for whatever reason, actually, I'll tell you the reason. The guy who wrote this book, Matthew, this is right after he was called to be a disciple of Jesus. Like, 6 or 7 verses, actually 7 or 8 verses before that, Jesus literally looks at Matthew and says, follow me. In the middle of being a tax collector, because Matthew was a tax collector, his real name was Levi, to begin with. And he's sitting there at this table, and there's like all this gold that he's counting. And Jesus is walking by, and he says, Matthew. Well, he doesn't call him by Matthew, but he says, come, follow me. And Levi, Matthew, he stands up and walks away. He leaves the gold behind. He doesn't like grab a few coins, put it in a purse, and like, alright, let's go. He just leaves it behind and walks. He just follows Jesus. He left everything behind to follow Jesus. And then Jesus talks about this. It seems to me that I would probably remember that if I was in Matthew's shoes. That it's the first lesson that he really learned from Jesus after being his, like, personal disciple. So, thanks, buddy. I appreciate that. So what happened was these Pharisees, actually, the disciples of John the Baptist, who's baptizing people, came to Jesus and they asked him about, like, fasting. And they asked him all about, like, well, we fast. Like, why don't your disciples fast? And Jesus says this really, like, kind of mysterious thing. He says, like, can the wedding guests mourn as long as the bridegroom is with them? The days will come when the bridegroom is taken away from them, and then they will fast. That basically Jesus is like, dude, what? Why should they be fasting, man? Like, I'm here. Like, I'm the Son of God. Like, they don't have to, like, fast and wait for me. Like, I'm actually right here. So when I'm gone, they'll fast, but, like, not right now. And then he gives this teaching, and I'm pretty sure for Matthew, his ears would have perked up. Like, for him, this teaching about this wineskin and the cloth, like, for Matthew, it was pretty relevant. That Jesus was describing things in a way that he had never heard. And it just made sense to him. It's kind of the opposite with us today. Because we're not in a culture, in a context, where that makes sense to us. Like, immediately. So I'm going to have to explain a little bit. And it's going to take a little bit of effort on your part to kind of, like, come with me on this little journey of, like, explaining about wineskins and garments. So I'm just kind of, like, letting you know up front. Not an easy task. But is it worth it to you to know why Jesus would say anything? Because this statement, explains in large everything about Jesus, everything about why he came. So I'm going to read it again. All right. I want you to just listen. Okay. I'm just going to read verse 16 this time. No one puts a piece of unshrunk cloth on an old garment, for the patch tears away from the garment and a worse tear is made. See, here's what would happen. Okay. You'd have like a robe. Okay. Actually, let's just say, yeah, like a robe, like they'd wear like a robe. And then a tear is made. So the tear rips open. And then what you would not do is take a brand new piece of cloth. Have you ever like gotten a new shirt and then you wash it and it shrinks a little bit? You ever had that experience? Like, or have you ever by chance messed up the laundry and like, I don't know, do you guys do your own laundry? I mean, maybe you do. I didn't until I got out of high school. So, like, I was kind of spoiled, I guess, in that way. Didn't wash my own dishes either. So, you know, there you go. But, like, when I was washing a shirt one time, imagine you're washing a shirt and you washed it in, like, the wrong cold water. I don't even really remember how it happens, but, like, it shrinks the shirt. And, like, it comes out and it looks like a little baby t-shirt. And you're like, that's not, like, that's not what I wanted, you know. That's not kind of the thing I was going for. And so what happens is that shirt kind of shrinks because it's brand new. So let's say in this older culture, you have like a cloak, you know, this robe. It's your favorite robe. And then one day you finally get this tear. And you're like, ah, crap, you know. And it's too big to kind of sew together. Like you rip off the whole thing. Like you got it stuck on something or whatever. And so your way to fix that is to put cloth on it. So you take a brand new piece of cloth and you weave it in there. But then it kind of goes. And that brand new piece of cloth starts to shrink, right? And so it was whole and it fit perfectly. And then it starts to shrink and it puts a strain on the rest of the cloth to where the rest tears and now you have a bigger tear. Does that kind of make sense? Okay, so Jesus is talking to these guys. And he's like, you put a new unshrunk piece of cloth. Okay, now with that in mind, like this robe garment, let me explain this again. No one puts a piece of unshrunk cloth on an old garment. For the patch tears away from the garment, and a worse tear is made. Okay, so that makes sense? Now, Jesus is doing something totally different from anybody else in this day in this picture. He's saying something that these guys have never heard. You know what it is? He's using logic. That's crazy. Like, unheard of logic about religious things. See, the priests and the rabbis, they would like be like, well, you should do this and you should do that because of these things. You know, like, well, I'm telling you to do it, so you should. Like, I mean, if you think about it, they had like all these Sabbath day rules, right? And on the Sabbath day, they had to do all these like crazy wild things. For instance, like, you're not allowed to do work on the Sabbath day. Sorry, I had like a hair thing. Okay, and so like you're not allowed to do work. So literally, on the Sabbath day, you're not allowed to like turn on your light switch. Okay? Why? Because it like it's work to like turn it on. Like you have to prepare everything. You can't make your own food on the Sabbath day. Like there's so many little things and so little like detailed things. Now for me, I'm like, how does that line up? Like that doesn't really make sense to me. That you can't make a meal because it's the Sabbath day. Like, how does doing that little bit of work, that like making a meal, how does that break like this huge overriding like theme? See, I'm more of a concepts person. I never made like straight A's. Like, I never did that great on tests because it's all like multiple choice and memorizing and like spelling out this list. But I'm more of a concepts person. So, like, I like to ask the question, not like, okay, well, this is, you know, like, throw out exactly what you were told, but, like, why am I being taught this? So, if I sit in a science class, I'm asking, well, why does the world work like this? You know? Whereas other students, like, so I was really bad in chemistry, really good in biology kind of thing. Does that make sense? Not very good at math, but really good at history. Like, pretty good at English. You know, why are we talking about what we're talking about? So with this passage, my question is like, why is Jesus saying this? And that's what he's pretty much saying to them. Why are you being told everything? Like, why are you religious? Like, why are you part of this huge thing? Like, he's pretty much breaking it down and saying, like, what do you think? Like, use your brain. Like, what do you think? Use your heart. What do you feel? Like, for you personally, like, what are you in this big picture? See, I think a lot of people go to church and they don't know why. It doesn't really matter to them. I think that because that's how it was for me. And I think that because that's how it was for most of my friends. But I mean, maybe you're not there, maybe you're totally here for all that, but totally, like, if you are totally on board and like, dude, this is awesome, I'm jiving with Jesus, like, this is pretty important, so you should probably pay attention and tune in. If you're not and you're like, I don't even really know, well, I mean, you should probably tune in, this is kind of important, so like, you know, here we go. So he uses logic to bring something to light. See, here's the problem with religion. Here's the problem with religion, okay? You ready for this? This undermines everything out there. Islam, Catholicism, all religion, this is the problem. It's all about adding God to your life. I'm a religious person, meaning I add God to what I'm doing. It's like, well, I'm part of, you know, YMCA, I'm part of this, I'm part of Boy Scouts, like, and I'm part of this church, you know, like, I'm a Christian. And it's just another title, it's another accessory to add onto your life. What Jesus is saying is that when you add something to your life, like God, that it tears everything up and it doesn't fit. It doesn't work. Because you're adding something that is real and new. Something that is good and pure and new. And you're putting it on something that's old and dirty and worn out and messed up. Here's what Jesus is saying. That our lives are so messed up that we can't just add Jesus to our screwed up lives. That he's not going to be an accessory that you can just add on to your already screwed up life. Because it would just tear things worse. It would just put a strain on things and nothing would work. It just wouldn't mesh. There's a problem there. Okay? So that's not where he leaves it though. He gives another illustration. Okay, you ready? Follow with me here. Verse 17. Neither, on the same aspect, neither is new wine put into old wineskins. If it is, the skins burst and the wine is spilled and the skins are destroyed. But new wine is put into fresh wineskins and so both are preserved. How many of you guys are like 21? I didn't think so. Hopefully, I'm not going to ask you to know raising hands, but like, hopefully you never drank wine. I've never drank wine. Like, maybe in communion, but that's about it. Here's the thing. I don't expect you to know a lot about wineskins or wine. Actually, to be honest with you, I don't really know anything about wine, except what I studied for this. So I'm going to share with you what I studied. How many do you know a lot about wine? Just wondering. I don't either. So like, I know it's something about like fermentation. It like takes this long process to go from here to there and blah blah blah. But here's the thing: when wine, okay, you ready for what I learned? I'm just going to tell you what I learned about this. What would happen is you would make wine and it would ferment and you'd let it sit. And then you put it, when it was new, into a new wineskin. And so you have this fresh wineskin. And the reason it was a wineskin is because that skin would stretch. So as that wine is fermenting and it's like kind of aging with time, that skin and that wine would kind of, I don't want to say become one, but they would kind of like dwell in this like equilibrium. Like, it would stretch to the amount of wine, and the wine would, like, match the skin. So you wouldn't, like, if you had one bag, one wine skin, then you had another, they'd be different. Because you'd have different amounts of wine. So here's what Jesus is saying. Say you take one wine skin, and it's been aging, and it has the wine in it, and it's been going for, like, 50 years. And then you pour out the wine. You know, like, you have a big party, you have this big wedding feast, and everybody's drinking this wine, and so they drink it out. Then you have the empty wine skin. Then you don't take it back to the same old like brewery or whatever, a wine press, and they make new wine, and they're like, okay, it's going to take another 50 years for this. They wouldn't pour it into that old wineskin. Because here's what would happen. It would pour in, and it would sit there for a while. It'd look like it's fine. And then as that wine was fermenting, and like as time went by, it would burst open the wineskin and all the wine would be spilt. Because that wineskin had already stretched to its maximum potential. It had already stretched out. So now it would just burst because it would have to stretch out again. Does that make sense? Kind of following along? Okay, so what Jesus is saying is, no, like, it's illogical. It doesn't make sense to put new wine into something that's already stretched and become accustomed to the old wine. So what do? You put the new wine into a new wineskin. You take it to something fresh. You give it a new start so that it's ready to accustom and mature and grow and expand to the new life, this new substance that's inside of it. So the difference in this passage is in both instances, in both illustrations, it's talking about something old and then something new. The old garment and the old wineskin. And then the new garment and a new wineskin. It doesn't really say new garment, but like, let's throw that in there. A new garment and a new wineskin. New wineskin. So, why is Jesus saying this? He's saying it because just a few verses before he called Matthew to leave everything behind. And for Matthew, these two illustrations, and even the one before it, summed up everything that just happened in his life. Now, Jesus said, those two illustrations, they make two points. One, Jesus will not be an accessory to your already ruined life. And two, if Jesus is going to be a part of your life, something has to change. Because as it is, your life, as messed up and ruined as it is, as screwed up as we've made things, there's no room for Jesus. Are you guys familiar with like what's it called? The birth of Jesus? Like what's the word for it? The nativity. The nativity of Jesus. Are you familiar with the nativity of Jesus? Like around Christmas time, we have like these little like Christmas scenes of like Jesus in a little manger and like Mary and Joseph and like the three wise kings who actually didn't show up till way later, but whatever. And then there's like the shepherds and the goats and whatever. And then there's like an angel or whatever. So you have this Christmas scene, the nativity. How many of you guys remember this story, yeah? Maybe? If you don't, that's fine. I'm going to tell you in a little bit anyways. So what happened was, Mary and Joseph went to Jerusalem, a place they weren't around, and Mary was pregnant with Jesus, and Virgin Mary, you know, this whole thing. And so they travel there, they get to Jerusalem, she's pregnant, she's about to have this kid. So Joseph is like, oh, freak, like, I guess we should, like, go somewhere. Like, I don't know what to do, so let's get you laying down somewhere instead of riding a donkey the whole time. So he goes and he looks for a place. And, like, I guess they didn't have hospitals then because, like, you kind of birth your own kid. So he's kind of like, hotel, let's get a hotel and you can just, like, sleep it off or something and tomorrow we'll deal with it. So, like, he's looking for a hotel and he finds one. It's called the Inn. And he goes to this inn and he's like, oh, hey, dude, you're the manager, right? My wife is having a kid. Can I, like, get a room? Now, the manager dude is like, I actually have other guests. The manager's like, I actually have other guests. Like, I kind of prefer for you not to have your wife, like, screaming all night and, like, having a kid. But I have this place out back, you know. Literally in Scripture it says that there was no room in the inn. That there were too many guests already. That there was no room for them. And so he gave him this, like, little manger and this, like, little place out behind. So literally, when Jesus came into the world, there was no room. Like, no room for him. Now, there's also this other point, as Jesus is in his ministry, and he's like 30-something years old, and he's in his ministry, there's this guy who comes, and it's this guy who wants to be a disciple. This guy's like, hey, yo, like, I want to follow you. Like, what do I have to do? And Jesus says, the foxes have holes, and the fowl have their nests, but the Son of Man has no place to rest his head. That Jesus literally had no home. When he was on earth, he had no like house to go like chill at. He didn't have a pad. He didn't have a 360 sent at home. He had no place. That the world had no room for him to dwell. When he was born and when he lived. And then whenever he dies, you remember the crucifixion? He's up there on the cross and then he dies. And then he's taken down from the cross. They didn't even have a place to put him. They're like, dude, does he have like a sepulcher? Or like, we could just burn his body or something. Like, there's a ditch somewhere. And this guy, Joseph of Arimathea, is like, I'll take his body. Because Joseph was like a secret disciple, like a secret agent disciple, you know. And he comes up to the Pilate and he's like, hey, I got this sepulcher. Like, it's kind of like a family tomb. And I'd like to put Jesus there, if that's okay. Pilate's like, okay. So literally, there was no place for him to rest, even in death. Like, he lived in a borrowed tomb. Well, was buried in a borrowed tomb. So Jesus, not having room to be born, not having room when he was here ministering to mankind, and not having room even when he died, he's saying to you and I, you don't have room for me. That our lives are so screwed up and so full of so much junk and so much of ourselves and full of so much mess and disaster that there is no room for Jesus. You ever seen like a disaster zone? Like after a hurricane or a tornado or something? And it's just, it's cluttered. Have you ever seen your own room? Like, I don't know. Do you guys like clean your rooms? Like, I used to have this epidemic in my house. My room was always a mess. And as many times as my mom asked me to clean it, and as many times as I did clean it, it just became a mess. Like, 2 hours later, like, somehow my clothes got everywhere, my toys everywhere, all that stuff. And I'm going to be a little bit honest with you, still happens. There's still days I wake up, I'm like, how the freak did this place get a mess again? It's kind of because me and this other guy are roommates, and like, we split the room in half. And so he literally sleeps on the floor. Like, he has like a mattress that he like blows up. And like, he sleeps on the floor, and I have like a futon. And so like, we're like two dudes splitting up a room, and it's just like, dang it. Like, because he has his stuff everywhere, I have my stuff everywhere. And it's like, we can never get clean. Like, it's just cluttered, it's a mess. And like, my mom used to always say, like, it looks like a tornado hit this place. You know, like, you ever get that, like, from your parents? Like, it looks like a tornado or a hurricane hit this place. That literally, when Jesus is looking into our hearts, into our lives, he says, it looks like a tornado hit this place. Like, you are so cluttered and such a mess. That there is so much filth and dirt in our lives that like, we could sweep and we could, like, try to clean it up as best as we can. We can tuck our clothes into the drawers. We can just close them up. We can do as much as we can. But as soon as light hits our lives, we realize how dirty we are. Like, have you ever seen a room and you clean it, like, in the springtime, and you clean it as best as you can, and, like, it's all closed off, but you clean as much as you can, and then the window opens up, and then that ray of light comes in, and then you see, like, these little, like, dust clouds, like, just floating around. You're like, what the heck? And you see, like, dust where you've never, like, expected dust to be. That it's as though, like, the carpet was cut up and, like, pulled back, and you see, like, inches of dirt. I was at the church earlier at my Life Community, and one of the guys was, like, playing around with drumsticks. And there was a chair that, like, one of the guys sits in for the sound, to run sound. And he was just, like, messing around with the drumsticks, and he hits the chair, and it was, like, a little bit of dust. And he was like, dude, check this out. And he's like, and, like, hitting the chair. Dust is flying everywhere. And the dude who was sitting there was like, I've been sitting there for, like, an hour. Like, are you kidding me? Like, I'm going to die. Like, he was legit concerned. That's what it's like with our lives. That Jesus is like, you are filthy. And we're like, I'm actually pretty clean. Like, I just swept up a little bit. Like, I just put my clothes in my drawers. And he's like, no, let me pull back this curtain of your religion. Let me pull back this curtain of your words. And let me hit it with the drumsticks on your little cushion here. And realize how dirty we are. So that's what Jesus is saying here with this old garment. He's like, I can't come in and add to your life because it's just going to make it worse. It's just going to get more cluttered. And Jesus is not satisfied with just being another, like, accessory, another item for you to discard. So in the second little section, in the verse 2, well, verse 17, I guess, the second verse, he says, new wine. Neither is new wine put into old wineskins. See, Jesus is not an old thing. It's a little bit different. That this isn't some old religion. This isn't some old, like, little Catholic cross that you put on. This isn't something buried in the past or some religious book that you just kind of, like, put in a locker somewhere. That this is something that's new, something that's real, something that's in your life, that's ever present. It's something, like, now. It's not something far off or distant. or unrelative, but it's something like present. Something that matters. So he says that new wine is not put into this old wineskin. Because if it is, the skin bursts, right? Because that skin's already become accustomed to it. So here's what Jesus is saying to you and I, right here in this passage. This is the point that carries over to you and I today. This is why, like, I would come to you, like, and share something about a garment and wineskins that you're like, what the freak does that matter? And honestly, like, to begin with, I was like, I don't know if they're going to get that. But I have enough confidence in you to kind of, like, understand what Jesus is saying. That he's saying, literally, that your life has become so accustomed to the mess that you've created that you don't have room for me. And even if I came into your life, over time, it would just bust. That there's no room for you to grow with me. There's no room for you to come with me. There's no room for you to have me here. Not for an extended period. So what I'm going to do, this is what Jesus says, what he's going to do is he's going to make you into something you're not capable of being. He's going to take your old self and he's going to put that to death. And he's going to give you new life. Make you this new wineskin. Make you something you weren't before. A new creation. And then his spirit comes in you. This new spirit. And you're taking on this journey to become something you were never capable of being. You never thought possible. And in reality, it's more of a restoration. But it's this redeeming new creation. That's what's important. That Jesus didn't come to be added on. He didn't come to just sit in the back seat. He came to reign supreme in your lives. Let that just saturate with you for a second. Let that resonate. That Jesus isn't satisfied with just being a Savior. He desires to be Lord and Master of your lives. That he doesn't just look at what you've done and who you were. He wants to make you into something new. Something more. You guys ever seen like an invitation call? There were a lot of invitation calls when I grew up. And I used to go for it a lot. And there was this old hymn. And I don't know if you guys have heard this hymn. And it's like, Come As Thou Art. You know, it's like, they used to play it every Sunday. Do you know the hymn I'm talking about? It's like, come unto Jesus and like, come as you are. I forget the words. I should have printed it out or something, thinking about it now. But like, it's like, come as you are is the phrase. And they just kind of repeat it over and over and over, hoping that people will come. But see, here's the thing. It's not just to come as you are. Because if you truly come to Jesus as you are, you don't leave the same. Everything changes. Everything changes. Who you are is transformed from the inside out. See, the title of this message, the point that I'm trying to get across, this is actually an ancient doctrine that has been held and defended by theologians throughout history. From the early church to the reformers to today, this is a doctrine that is held precious, and the name of that doctrine is conversion. It's a doctrine within salvation of man. That there are these men, and they look through in the world and they're like, we got a pretty screwed up world. And they look to the heavens and they say, God, what's the solution? And his answer is Jesus. So these men will study through Scripture and they search through God's revelation to man for his truth. Sometimes they argue, sometimes they debate. But this truth, conversion, this is what matters for you and for me. This is the only hope that we have. Is that God was not satisfied with where we were, so he came to bring us to himself. He came to make us into something totally different. He came to give us life. Eternal life. True life. That's what he's talking about right here. And he makes that statement at the end. He says, you know, about the new wine is put into fresh wineskins, so both are preserved. So that both are preserved. When you're changed by Jesus, that's a lifelong thing. It's not something that lasts 2 weeks or 2 minutes. It's not something that lasts 10 years. It lasts all eternity. That when you're changed by Jesus, you're forever changed. Imagine if I was a little bit late here today, and I came in about like 2 o'clock instead of like 1:30, like I'm supposed to. And imagine I came in through the door, and you guys were just kind of like, I don't know, Tony was leading, or you guys were just kind of sitting here, or even you were doing some worship, and I came in at 2 o'clock, and you're like, dude, where have you been? Like, what was up? And I was to tell you this story, right? I was to say, okay, well, I had to walk here, right? And so, which I didn't, but like, let's say I had to walk here. And so I'm walking, and then like, you know that intersection up the road? And I'm telling you this story. There's this intersection, and I was walking, I was listening to my iPod, and I was thinking about coming here and speaking, and I was just going through all this stuff, and I wasn't really paying attention, so I started to walk through the intersection, and this giant 18-wheeler logger truck like was going through the intersection, and he hit me, and then that's why I'm late. And see, your first instinct would be like, he actually hit you? I'd be like, yeah, he just totally floored me, and so that's why I'm late. So you'd kind of be like, dude, okay, you're either lying to us, and like there was something else, like you went to get a bite, or you know, whatever, you're lying, or if you truly believe this, you are crazy. Only two logical explanations. Either you're lying or you're crazy. Like, because there's no way an 18-wheeler, it just hit you 5 seconds ago, and you just walked in here fine. No limp, nothing. Just fine. See, it's just as crazy to say that you've been changed by God, but not have that evident in your life. Which is bigger, an 18-wheeler logging truck or God? Creator of the universe. He who breathed planets into existence. Who told the oceans where to go. Who told the mountains how high to be. He who knows every hair on your head. Who's all powerful, all knowing, sovereign, completely in control. Who's bigger? So you mean to tell me that you've been changed by God? You've interacted with the Creator Himself. He who literally created everything. You mean to tell me you've interacted with this guy? And you're no different than before? Well, there's only two logical explanations. You're either a liar or you're crazy. Are you different than you were before? See, it's a touchy issue, and I'm not going to tell you where you are in this story. I'm not going to say whether you're old wineskin, new wineskin, old garment, new garment, what? That's for you and God. But conversion is a complete and total transformation. See, the word conversion literally means to be transferred from one state of being into another. In math and science classes, you have like conversion of units, you know, like from metric to kilometer, like from like miles and kilometers, and you have all these like conversions of units. You pretty much change how it looks and feels and everything about it. That when water like changes in its cycles, it's converting into different cycles. So like becomes a gas, becomes a liquid, becomes a solid. You have these different conversions, different states of being. See, conversion means literally a change from one state of being to another state of being. And then when it comes to theology and religion and to actually this, what we're talking about right now, it means to be changed from a state of a sinner to the state of a saint. Not St. Paul or Augustine or whoever, but literally one who's been made pure and holy by God. Separated from the life he once lived. Separated for his holiness. This is some big stuff we're talking about. It's pretty life-changing stuff. Because if this is true, it's pretty significant. But you might be looking at me like I'm crazy. Because this kid's up here talking about being like new wineskins and old wineskins and like all that stuff. But you have to ask, like, is it logical? Does that make sense to you? Does it make sense that your life is actually kind of a mess? Like, is that news? Like, is that something you've never really thought about? Like, do you sincerely believe that your life is totally in order and you're perfectly righteous before God? Because I'm going to be honest with you. My life's pretty screwed up. There are times when I want to do what's right and I end up doing what's wrong. And there are times when I look and I say, what is wrong and I don't want to do that. But then I end up doing it anyways. That it's so screwed up that at times I seek my own selfish desires instead of the better things for my brother and sister. It's pretty screwed up stuff. That there's so much mess within our lives. And we're all on that same level, that same playing field. That we're all equally depraved, equally in need of God. The fact is, He is pulling people. That He is drawing people to Himself. And converting them from what they were to what He is calling them to be. And the reason I think this is of such great importance is because out of this group in here, there are some who are called to be with Him and some who are being called to be with Him. To be converted from a state of mess of a life, a state of need, to a state where they have new wine in their lives. They have the Spirit of God. That they have love and joy and peace. That they find their satisfaction, their identity, in who He is, and not in their material possessions. So, this is what I wanted to share with you today. Because Matthew thought it was pretty important, so he recorded it. Jesus thought it was pretty important because He said it. God thought it was pretty important because He sent Jesus to say it. I think it's pretty important because for whatever reason, I was sent here to say it to you. And it's also pretty important because you happen to be here to hear it. It's not some random fluke chance that you happen to be in a church right now, or that your parents happen to be here, or that Tony happens to gather you guys here together. It's not by some fluke chance that I happen to be here either. That for whatever reason, God has a plan in store for all of His creation. And He is putting His people on a path that runs right in front of them. That they'll just get smacked down by it. That we actually encounter the living God. That is insane to me. That the Creator of the universe, eternal, who has existed for all everything, who created everything, actually desires a personal relationship with fallen, depraved, messed up people like us. That He has risked everything and He has sacrificed His Son and bore the wrath of God to have us in His family. That's pretty important. So this is conversion. If you forget everything else, this is it. To be converted is to be changed from one state of being to another. It's to be completely transformed. Now the question in your lives that you have to ask, the thing that you have to come to terms with, the thing that carries over into your week beyond a Sunday, beyond a meeting like this, the thing that carries over into your personal relationship with God, if there is one or if there isn't, the thing that carries over is the question in your life, do I have that relationship? Am I transformed? Am I different from the world around me? Am I different from who I was? And if not, do you desire to be? There's some questions that we must wrestle with as people. Would you be such a lover of truth that you wouldn't stop until you found the answers? I pray that you would be. That you would wrestle with truth night and day until you came face to face with the Creator. So I'm going to ask that you would close your eyes for a moment. And we're going to close in prayer in a second. But I have a couple things that I want to say personally to you guys, like individually. Okay? That I want you guys to kind of think about. So go ahead and close your eyes with me. And just kind of listen for a moment. Now I'm sure that you've heard all of this before. That you've heard about Jesus, that you've heard about God, that you've heard about conversion and His movement in the world. You've heard about the church. Maybe not about wineskins and about new garments, but you've heard at one point or another that you have to live for God, or you have to love Him, or you have to follow Him. Maybe those things never made sense before. Maybe you believe that your whole life you've followed God, and your whole life you've loved God. And maybe today, as I've been teaching through these two verses, this small passage hidden in Matthew from his personal account with Jesus, maybe this has so sparked in you a desire for truth that now, coming away today, you want to know for sure where your place is and with God. That as I've taught with you guys about the gospel over last week and then the weeks before, talking about who Jesus is and who He says He is, maybe these things have so sparked in you this curiosity, this desire to know in relationship with Him, to flee this life, this mess of a life that you've had for so long. Maybe now you want truthfully to belong to Jesus. Maybe this God that you saw as distant and irrelevant is now personal and real, and now He's right here before you. If you're in that spot and you're desiring a relationship with the Creator, and you feel as though you're being pulled towards Him and you can't ignore it anymore, then run to Him. Cling to the Savior. Cling to the cross. Submit to the Master. Run to Him. Run to Him with your messed up life. Come to Him as you are. Become His child. Walk with Him. Follow Him. Leave behind your tables of gold. Leave behind your futures. Leave behind your past. Come to Him now in the present. Come to Jesus. He's made a way. And He's come so that you can be something totally different. So now for a moment, I'm going to enter into prayer. And there's just going to be silence for a few moments. And that's so that you, with your eyes closed and silent prayer, can communicate with God, your Creator. So this time is for you in prayer. If you don't feel comfortable praying, then just sit in silence. Father, You have in Your hand the power of life. And we are people in need of that life. These children have been dead for so long. And needed the life that You've brought. But I pray that You will simply lay Your hand on them. That You will pour Your Spirit into them. That You would make them into a new creation. Father, I plead with You. I plead with You. For the sake of conversion. Not for our glory, but for Yours. I pray that You will lay Your hand on us. That we might live. That we might have life. Full. Rich, abundant life. Father, may Your words not fall on deaf ears. I pray that You would open ears and open eyes to see truth. That You would cause hearts to yearn for truth. To desire You. We who were born God-hating and God-fearing. That we can now be God-loving. Jesus, we follow You. We leave behind everything and we follow You. May Your Holy Spirit comfort us and preserve us.
He may guide us. May we follow and be faithful and listen and obey. May we be the disciples You're calling us to be. We've been converted from a life of death to a life full and rich in You. I pray these things, O God. I beg them as a child asking for bread for his brothers and sisters. As a child not asking for bread only for myself, but for those around me, God. We are simply beggars. And the only news I have for these here is that there is bread to be found in Jesus. Father, I pray that You give us this bread. This daily bread. I pray this thing in Your Son's name. Jesus Christ. Amen.